Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of November, on a Domini 2025. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Cloudflare's global network is a distributed infrastructure of servers and data centers located in over 330 cities across more than 120 countries, delivering content delivery, security, and performance optimization services. It comprises over 13,000 networks, including every major ISP, cloud provider, and enterprise worldwide. And on Tuesday, it experienced a major outage. It started about 6:45 a.m. Eastern with their support portal, but quickly spread to a huge swath of the entire global network. This not only affected their own core content delivery network, but also social networks like Spotify, Twitter, Zoom, Azure, and ChatGPT, took down much of Google and Amazon Web Services as well. And let's not forget nodes all across Europe. This lasted for almost 7 hours. Originally, Cloudflare said, and I quote, "a spike in unusual traffic," end quote, caused, and again I quote, "some errors," end quote.
Only some.
Later, they said the unusual traffic caused a configuration file to grow too large, which crashed the system. Later yet, they said a change to database access controls triggered a cascading failure across its global network. You'll not be surprised to hear that the latest reason is the bot management system that used a machine learning model, yes, AI, to protect against security threats. So I figure at some point, they'll just blame it on a gremlin on the wing of William Shatner's airplane and move on. About 20% of the web relies on Cloudflare to manage and protect traffic. You heard that right. 20% of all the traffic on the internet goes through one company. So when they get it wrong, they get it really wrong for lots of other people. But they've said they're sincerely sorry, and they're working to fix the problem for next time, so that's all right then. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Cloudflare outage, everybody panic! Your choices are, I didn't notice, I was annoyed, it seriously disrupted my morning, I took the day off, thanks Cloudflare. Hey, did you know about books? And I hid under the covers and wept. So far, we've got 27 votes, and I didn't notice is in the lead significantly. And that makes sense because it happened at 7 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, a lot of people weren't there yet. A lot of businesses got disrupted.
U.S., yeah.
Yeah. Of course, if you want to vote in the poll, it's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, if you want to talk about that or dang near anything involving computers, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
And after the Amazon outage last month, yeah, people are realizing Cloudflare is 20%, Amazon is 63%.
Yep.
So two companies have 80% of the internet, and
Amazon runs through Cloudflare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what Cloudflare does is it doesn't just host content; it also is a filter. So the easy way to block spam and all of that stuff, denial of service attacks, DDoS attacks, is to use Cloudflare as your filter, as your front facing piece of the internet. So when Cloudflare goes down, you go down. That's why a lot of Europe went down. A lot of websites couldn't be gotten to. A lot of websites that could be gotten to were really, really slow. It was a pretty major thing. Now, again, you know, good and bad, kudos to the sysadmins at Cloudflare for fixing it as quickly as they did. 7 hours may seem like a lot of time, and believe me, when you're the sysadmin, it is.
Yep.
But given what they had to do, because they didn't even know what the problem was at first, they did yeoman's service. So that was good. That was a good thing. But you know, somebody fudged up. Somebody definitely made an error. And what they're saying is, it was a Rust command. Rust is a programming language. It's the new hotness. And there is a command that there's several different. So they do a test, and they have this file of errors, not errors, but anomalies, and they limit it to 200 entries because they don't want to have it running over all the memory in the system. Okay, that's generally reasonable.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been running
control.
For years that way.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The problem is when they check for it, there's three things they could check for, and I'm not going to go into what they all are, but the one they used was basically,
oops,
we better put an entry in the anomaly table about this. So when you get an anomaly in the anomaly table and the table is full, it tries to put in an entry in the anomaly table to say the table is full.
Which generates an error saying the table is full. So, which tries to write the error, but it can't because the table is full. It generates an error.
At computer speeds.
Yeah, 4 billion cycles per second.
Exactly right.
And
shockingly, it crashed. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
Now, it is very easy to use an entirely different command that essentially says, okay, something happened. What happened? Okay, if this happened, do this. If that happened, do that. But they didn't do that. They just said, ooh, something happened. We should put a thing in the error log, and then somebody go look at it later. Well, yeah. So, and okay, so everything they said was right. Yes, there was a file that ran out, that ran over memory. Yes, there was a file that ran out of memory. Yes, yes. In the end, all of the things they said had happened.
Yeah, it's like getting stuck in a revolving door.
But
once you stepped in, it just keeps going around, yep, and around and can't get out.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is somebody didn't do a good code review.
Yeah.
Nobody looked at that code and
said... They vibed it.
They vibed it, probably. Or, you know, Rust is such a new language, a lot of people don't understand the nuances at this point, right? So you get somebody who's just learning Rust,
mm-hmm,
who's QAing your code... They're not going to catch it. They're not going to catch the problem. So, I in a sense, I get it. I get it. But it's just bad quality assurance.
They're a little rusty.
Yeah.
Boom. Thank you. He'll be here all week. Try the veal.
You led me into that one.
I did.
One of the first reports I had read is that they initially thought it was a DDoS attack against them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, the distributed denial of service, if you can send enough packets at a site, you can take that site down because it can't process them all that fast.
Right. And why would
they were?
I was going to say, though, just to step in just for a second, why would they put a limit on the number of incidences?
Well, because usually it's 3 or 4 or 5 before somebody looks at it and wipes it out.
And you got to allocate memory for it. So
you got to allocate memory.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So all right.
200 was a lot.
Yeah. And
until this happened.
All right. So that. Steve.
Yeah, that's right. So there was a recent real DDoS attack. A lot of companies, one of the reasons Cloudflare is so big is that they have DDoS protection against large attacks. They recorded a 22 terabit per second attack.
Yeah.
22 trillion bits per second. Now, they say they have 400 terabit per second processing power.
Right.
So the bad guys have to go a ways. 22 terabit per second attack is equivalent to about 1 million 4K videos streaming at the same time from the same computer.
Yep.
And they were able to fend it off. which is great. But that's a small company that gets attacked. First thing they do after recovering is hire Cloudflare.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. And that makes sense. Now, the reality is that Cloudflare was subjected to a denial of service mm-hmm. attack. It was their own yeah. denial of service. They denied their own service with their bad code. But and that, you know, that comes, we're seeing it everywhere. And I don't know what happens in the background at Cloudflare, okay? But clearly their Q&A missed. They do, you know, when the way companies should work is you write code in a system, and it's the development system. Then you put it over to a testing system, and only after it passes the testing system do you move it over to production. In all three of those, you're supposed to have code reviews. So somebody looks at the code, actually goes through it line by line, and says, yeah, this makes sense to me, this is okay.
And it should be somebody that's never seen the code before.
But because, is familiar with the language.
Right. So it's like you're writing a paper, and you think you've found all the mistakes, and someone else looks at it, and there's a spelling error in the first sentence.
Yep.
Because you just glossed right over it.
Yep. It's very hard. I'm writing a book right now, and it's very hard to edit, because every word out of my mouth is a gem, a pearl. And it's very hard to get rid of that mindset and become the editor.
Yeah, one of the tricks I learned ages ago is read it backwards.
Yep.
That way you don't gloss over words that aren't there that are supposed to be, and vice versa, because you're not expecting what the sentence is going to say.
Right. Or you just at the very least, read it out loud.
Yeah.
And that helps.
Or have the computer read it to you. Most computers do text-to-speech.
So one of the things that companies do, and again, I don't know if Cloudflare does this. I know Microsoft does this, and it's one of the reasons they're Microsoft, is they use AI to do their quality assurance.
Mm-hmm.
AI stinks at quality assurance.
Gee.
And even if they're using humans, not a lot of people know Rust to the intimate level that it's needed to do real QA when you come up against a really subtle nuance like the one they had.
Yep. Somebody posted a meme trying to explain how bad AI is. And he goes, hey, AI, is this berry poisonous? And the AI says, no, it's fine. It's actually high in antioxidants. 30 minutes after eating the berry. Hey, AI, I'm going to the emergency room. That berry was poisonous. AI says, oh, you're absolutely right. That was poisonous. Would you like a list of 10 other poisonous berries?
Yeah. Except it's subtler than that, because the one I read said, is this berry edible? The answer is always yes.
Yeah, every berry is edible once.
Once. And so, you know, that leads you to two things. First, don't freaking trust AI. Secondly, if you're going to put something in AI, pay attention to what you're putting in. We've all seen the science fiction episodes where people fake out a computer by giving it a logic
puzzle.
A logic problem that it can't solve.
An endless loop.
And then it goes into a loop, or it does whatever it does, or it finds Captain Kirk another girl. But the idea is that AI is the same. It will be literal. Is this berry edible? Yes. Yes, this berry is edible.
They just don't say by whom.
For certain select values of edible, this table is edible.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it is edible. Should you know?
Just remember, AI was trained on the internet. Everything's always right on the internet, isn't it?
And simultaneously wrong.
Yes. Schrodinger's internet. Right. Yeah.
But I've been dealing with this lately too. One of the issues with AI is that it wants to make us happy. And therefore, it is very reluctant to say, I don't know.
There have been documented cases where AIs won't turn off. They go out of their way to placate you and come up with reasons to not turn off.
Yep. So one of the things that I have started to do now is whenever I ask an AI something, I say, if you can't verify this answer, tell me you don't know.
Yep.
Hmm. Okay.
It's still reluctant.
They'd rather make up a wrong answer than say they don't know.
Yep. Yep, yep.
Like most people.
And I know that's not the same. I know people.
Yeah, not much different.
Yeah.
And I don't trust them any more than I trust AI. So, you know, we all want to seem smart. We all want to make other people happy. So we tend to pretend we have more knowledge than we have. That shouldn't be true of AI. If I were to program an AI, the default would be I don't know.
Safer.
And it's safer that way. I'm sorry, but it just is. And I get it. People don't.
Gee, it might just cause you to do a little more research and, you know, thought on your part.
Well, that's just it. You know, I have an argument with a friend of mine about programming in AI. He's all in on it, absolutely all in on it. And I keep telling him every time I've asked AI to write a program for me, it lies to me. It gives me Python libraries that don't exist, or it gives me code that doesn't work. And then when I say this library doesn't exist, half the time it says, you're absolutely right. Here's the right library, and it gives me the same library again.
Again?
I'm at the point where I just...
Frustrating.
There's no point in it. For small bits of code, yes. For example, given this database structure, write the code that would give me this result. About 90% of the time, it's right. But if you ask it to formulate a program, and I used to do this for a living, okay? So I know how to ask the questions. I know how to formulate the question.
The workarounds.
And so half the time, it makes up libraries, or it makes up code, or it writes code that simply doesn't work. And what I don't understand is why it then doesn't run that code in the background and say, oh, yeah, it didn't do anything.
Then how can it, I'm answering my own question, how can it, you know, recommend something?
Because it didn't run it. It didn't actually run it. It just says, oh, this ought to work.
Put it together,
you know,
but doesn't...
I could have done that.
But doesn't go through the logic and seeing that if it's really feasible, that it's going to be able to carry it out.
Yep. I can write code that doesn't work by myself. I don't need you.
Oh, I did a lot of that.
I've written a lot of that code. I don't need you.
And sit there and say, what the heck was I thinking?
Exactly.
I remember one time in a programming class in college, the one printer we had went down. So everyone was trying to print their job to submit it for their class grade. One guy just typed up the code on his own computer, and lucky guy had an Apple II in his dorm room.
Ooh, wow!
And used his printer to just print it out from a word processor and handed it in. But he made a really bad mistake, so he typed the code and then he typed the answer. But if you actually ran the code on the school's computer, it would error out.
Nice, nice. So he was AI.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. All right, that makes sense.
40 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey.
But yeah, that's I just again for small. Now I will say that I had I needed a regular expression, and if you don't know what regular expressions are, I'm not going to go into it.
I'm much bigger into irregular expressions.
Yeah, me too. But I needed a regular expression that was very complex, and so I just said to AI, "Give me the regular expression that does this."
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fairly long thing, and I said I needed to take this input and give me this output, and it's got to, and it did, and it was perfect. So yes,
except
no, it ran. No, it absolutely worked the first time, and I was very impressed. But that is, for my experience, that is the exception rather than the rule.
Okay.
The tag on this shirt is making me crazy. It makes some things easier, but you have to take it all with a grain of salt. The best way to use AI is as a skeptic. No, I take that back. The best way to use AI is as a cynic.
Yeah, that's even better.
So it can be very useful as a starting point, but it rarely does the whole job well.
And I wouldn't call it gospel.
No, absolutely not.
You know, that is not the ultimate truth and, you know, what you're going to get out of it and everything else. Other factors could come in to really mess it up.
Yep. Now, I that is exactly right. And you have to be aware that your use of AI is predicated on the fact that it's going to lie to you. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that. Well, I've talked to a lot of teachers about, you know, what do we do? How do we get around this AI thing? What do we, you know, kids are using AI to write their papers.
How do you get around it? You don't.
Well, that's what I said. I said, you don't get around it. I heard about a teacher who gave kids a tough assignment, you know, a little above their grade level, and said, I specifically want you to use AI to answer this question. Then I want you to go in and tell me where AI got it wrong.
Oh.
Now, that makes sense to me.
That's a good challenge.
That makes sense to
me. Yeah.
Because not only do they use AI to do their to do the work, but now they have to go back and do the real research and explain why and how and where it went wrong. And, of course, that explanation has to include citations and quotes and all the things that you want.
Plus, it should shine some doubt in their minds.
Exactly.
That, you know, what they're spitting out through AI is questionable.
When my daughter was very, very young, we used to watch TV together. And, you know, toy commercials would come on because, God forbid, you have 4 minutes without a toy commercial in a children's program. And she would say, oh, God, I want that. I got to have that. I got to have that. I went out and bought one of the things. And then we watched the commercial and looked at the thing itself. And it really opened her eyes.
Mm.
The thing was nothing like the commercial.
Of course.
And, it was, and that started her, and I'm proud to say, she started on the path of cynicism.
Good for her.
Don't believe anything you hear until you've verified it yourself.
Well, they're always going to pump it up with the, you know, it doesn't matter what. Always going to tell you the positive sides of it, and, oh, you got to have it for this and this and this. And then you ask other questions, and, we didn't try that.
Right.
You know, or, yeah, it might. They really don't have any, you know, concrete evidence to support some of the other questions that they might be asked.
You've heard the expression, trust but verify?
Mm-hmm.
I believe in doubt but verify.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I'm sorry. For those of you out there who have gone all in on AI and love it and use it every day, God bless you. I'm a cynic and I do not trust it. I use it, but I don't trust it. And that's the difference, I think. And like I said, for some things, it gets it right the first time. And I am very pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah,
one thing I've always said is if you're a cynic, you'll rarely be disappointed.
The one thing I like about AI, you can ask it questions on, say, how to do this or how to do that or how to set this up, and it'll come back with opinions, you know, or places to go search, and or say, like, all right, I got a program, and where's it storing the files?
Right.
It'll go out and tell you, oh, you got to go into this directory down here and this, and point it out.
Right.
And that's a helpful tool.
Yes,
but
yes, it is.
But the other stuff, no.
Yeah, it is. And often, AI can point you in the right direction. I said this before, too. I'm writing this book, and I wrote my outline, and I thought, you know what? So I went to AI, and I said, I'm writing this book. Here's what it's about, blah, 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 blah. And here's the outline. Oh, no, and give me an outline.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me an outline, and it was very close to mine, except it had one or two things that I had simply missed. Perfect. So I added those. Now, nice. That is useful.
Yep.
It also put some things in that I looked at and said, this has nothing to do with the subject I'm writing about. Literally nothing to do with it. What is going on here?
Hmm.
AI can be useful, but take it with a grain of salt. Take it with a very large or, I don't maybe create very small. I don't know which way that should work. Grain of salt, and don't believe everything you read on the screen. It's not going to be 100% accurate. Now they are getting better, And like I said, for some things, they're excellent, but not everything. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 800-790-0415. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Ken from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Ken?
Hi. Just wanted to remind everybody that Thanksgiving's coming up. Time to get that turkey out of the freezer.
Yeah.
And give you and your families and everybody listening a blessing. Wish you all well and happiness and no arguing over that table now.
Thank you, Ken, and the same to you and yours.
I thank you very much, Nick, and I will leave you with one last thought. I actually came across this over a year and a half ago, and I didn't think about calling you, and I thought, I'm just going to pass it on. Well, maybe they already figured this out. But a while back, I remember you were, Dave especially, saying, I'd love to have a flash drive that I could lock. Well, believe it or not, there is one.
Oh, nice.
I think they pronounce it kangaroo, but they don't spell it that way. It's K-A-N-G-U-R-U. .com. And you can buy this at Walmart as well, too. I mean, I don't like to give them a plug, but I found a less expensive one, same company, on their website.
What's nice. This for?
Lockable thumb drive.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Nice. Very nice. Thanks, Ken.
I think that's the same company we found for CD burners. After Apple discontinued theirs. If for people that still want CD burners that don't come in computers anymore.
Right. You can buy USB.
No, but not all of them have Mac drivers.
Oh, right, of course.
This one does. Which is, it doesn't use USB mass storage. There's something different for CD.
Fine, as long as it works.
Is it Yellow Book or Blue Book or...
Yeah, one of those, yeah.
ISO 9660. Yeah, ISO 9660... Joliet or Romeo.
Right.
Remember those from 50 years ago?
And now they're important again.
Yeah.
No, I get it. Yeah, thanks, Ken. Oh, Ken's gone. Okay. Thank you.
We just talking with a customer this week. He still has a zip drive on his computer, and he was upset that... new computer didn't come with a floppy drive, and he's got all these old floppies he can't use anymore. So, get a USB floppy drive, like your USB zip drive. Oh, really? They still make those? Yeah, here
they go. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Gates, New York. What's up, Mike?
I'm on the subject of backups, specifically to OneDrive. In my case, I'm trying to... I have to it. And
I'm sorry, you're cutting in and out. I'm having trouble understanding you. I apologize.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, a little better.
You're not on a speakerphone, are you? Hello? Are you on a speakerphone, sir?
It might be a cell phone cutting out because all we're getting is static. Sorry.
Hello? Mike? Mike,
maybe
sorry,
not.
Mike, call back. Yeah. I apologize.
He was starting to ask about using OneDrive as a backup. OneDrive is not a backup; it's a sync.
Yeah.
And when you delete a file, OneDrive deletes that file also. You may be able to get it back after a few days from the OneDrive website. It does store deleted files for a while, but it's not a backup. You can't go to yesterday's version of the file or last week's version of the file you deleted 3 weeks ago because you didn't think you needed it. That's why you need a separate backup program.
Yeah,
syncing is good, so you have it somewhere else too, but you want to have a backup that keeps the old versions so you can go back and see those old files.
And, I mean, we've touted, you know, cloud services right along, and if you're worried about cost, you know, each Gmail account that you get gives you 15 gig.
Mm-hmm. Or you buy a terabyte hard drive for your local computer.
Yeah.
That's
you,
so
a couple.
Yeah, the 3-2-1
so
backup
solutions. So you can rotate.
You should have three copies of all your important files, at least three copies of all your files, and one at least one should be off-site. So having your computer and your backup drive sitting next to it is good. You've got a second copy. But fire, flood, theft, you could lose your main computer and your backup drive sitting next to it.
Right.
So having an off-site copy, some people will have two backup hard drives that they alternate between home and work. But not now. You got to check your work policies on removing electronics from your workspace.
Or bringing them in.
Mm-hmm. Bring them in, yeah. Having a syncing service is good. Having a backup service is better. Carbonite, Backblaze, there's a bunch of cloud backup services. Generally, they're about $5 per computer per month, which isn't too bad. And there was another one like pCloud. Had a sale a little while ago where you got, 10 terabytes for life?
Yeah.
For some 1% of the original cost?
Yeah, it was very cheap. We have a page up at Ask Nick called asknick.com/backup.php, and it'll give you a list of many of the backup solutions for the three, for every, yep. both, all three main computer operating systems plus iPhone and Android. So,
and that's the second link on the Some Important Links main home soundbites page.
Right. So like, you can go there at any time and see, and it talks about the 3-2-1 plan, three backups in two separate places, one of which is offline.
We used to say different media too.
Right.
So you'd have a hard drive and you have a tape drive.
Mm-hmm.
Tape drives don't work anymore because they're so small.
I had a friend who called me this week. He's a musician, and his sound guy lost a hard drive, mm-hmm. a 4-terabyte hard drive, SSD. He said, "How could that happen? It's not even 5 years old." I said, "Well, let's talk about mean time between failure, shall we?
20% per year.
Per year, it's every, 5 years is the average is the mean lifetime of a drive, which means some last for 10 years." Some die out of the box. Yep. Where you are on that spectrum is a crapshoot. And so you better have backups. Now, he'd said this guy definitely did have backups. So, you know, great.
Well, one of the problems with music and acting is you get that one perfect take,
right,
and it dies before you can copy it. Or if you have to bring all the actors back to the set and reshoot that scene you just lost, that's millions of dollars. So that's where DriveSavers comes in. For only $3,000, they can recover your file.
For only $3,000, they can tell you if they'll recover your file.
Yeah. Well, it's if they can't, there's no charge.
Oh, right. Finally. That's new. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Gates, New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. I called you guys last week. I was having a problem with my Windows 11 update. It was stuck on 23H2.
Right.
And you had suggested to go into the group policy editor and look at the Windows update policies. They all had said not configured, but you suggested go into a command line and typing in GP update /force.
Yep.
And so I did that, and when I rebooted, now it was finally, it wasn't giving me the "your computer is controlled by an organization" error when I tried to update. So that was good, and it showed 24H2 as available as an update. That wasn't showing up at all previously. So I kept trying to update it, and it would always fail at 8% downloading, and it would give me an error saying, "This update is not ready for your device." And I looked around, and some people online were saying, "Well, there might be something with your hardware that's, you know, not compatible or something." At least it showed up after I forced the update of the group policy
But maybe that's why it wasn't showing up, is it's not compatible with your device.
Well,
but why is it not compatible is the question.
Right, because we looked up the processor, and the processor is on the whitelist as being available for, you know, the 24H2, and I didn't look at 25H2.
And you've got, what's the other big one, TPM 2.0, and it's enabled. A lot of BIOSes have TPM turned off by default.
TPM?
The Trusted Platform Module.
Oh, I'm not even aware of that thing. That's something in the BIOS?
Something, it's a setting in the BIOS, yeah.
It's a device on your motherboard.
And you control it by setting the BIOS. Yeah. It's supposed to verify that the code you're running is trusted, signed and trusted. Usually means it has to be Microsoft.
Right.
One of the tricks in installing Linux on a PC is turning TPM off.
Right.
Now, is that similar to Secure Boot, or is that different?
It's related.
Okay.
But it's not quite the same thing.
Although Secure Boot is on, then TPM has to be on.
Maybe, but...
But it has to be 2.0 also. Older motherboards are only TPM 1.3.
Right. The thing you should probably do is run the Windows Update Troubleshooter.
Which I did. I kept going down the rabbit hole. I did, and it said, you know, found an issue with Windows Update, fix, and it fixed, claimed it fixed it anyway. And then after that, when I rebooted it, the 24H2 update wasn't even showing up anymore under updates. I would just keep refreshing updates, and it would say, your system is up to date.
Keep running the troubleshooter until it says no problems found.
Well, yeah. The other thing to do is to check to make sure it didn't actually update.
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah, I checked. It's still 23H2. Yeah, it's not updating. But the other thing was Secure Boot. I heard people saying, well, Secure Boot has to be on. So I turned, which happened to be off, I turned that on, but it still was not showing up anymore. The 24H2.
Yeah, well, certainly you should run the troubleshooter again and see what happens, but it does sound like there's some hardware device in your system that is not that compatible with 24H2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the CPU, the Ethernet, the audio,
the video card,
everything. Yeah.
That version of the motherboard.
In the Windows 11... what is the name of it? Hardware checker thingy. I'll find the real name of it. It gives you a summary, like your chip and your processor and your hard. And then there's a more info where it goes through all the other devices. Maybe looking into
more info. Or a chipset could be giving off something that's sparking the error too. There's a lot of different scenarios.
PC Health Check. That's the name of it.
Okay, PC health check. Okay, well, I'll try that, I guess.
So now, when after you ran the troubleshooter,
yep.
You looked in Windows Update and it didn't show you anything. But did you check for updates?
Yes.
Okay.
And in fact, after it went through the troubleshooter and I rebooted, and then I would check for updates, it doesn't even list 24H2 any longer. It's like it's not even there. And then I checked to make sure it didn't update it, and I didn't see it. But no, it's still on 23H2.
Yeah, what it does sound like your system has some hardware component that is blocking 24H2. And there have been a number of them over time that have done that. Products that Microsoft doesn't support.
Right. I mean, it's a Dell laptop, so I assume...
Now that's a little better.
Yeah.
You go to Dell's website, put in your support code, and it will give you the exact driver updates you need and give you the advice on which Windows 11 it's compatible with.
Right.
Okay. All right. I'll
and the support number, the support code is, or your serial number. So
yeah, I think it's on the bottom of the
exactly.
laptop.
Exactly.
Yep. It's a tag number.
Yep.
Okay. All right. And I was not aware of TPM. That's a setting I've never heard of before.
Yeah, that's the Trusted Program Module, and it is the security device that Windows uses to ensure that whatever they're insuring.
Right. Okay.
And see, that's why you listen to sound bites; you learn that much more.
Here's something too. If you're installing the Copilot version, you need an NPU, a neural processing unit.
Right.
Right.
So you know if you don't have an NPU. which the Intel chips don't. It's got to be an ARM version.
Right.
Then make sure you're getting the Windows update that doesn't have Copilot in it.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck with all that. Right. They want you to have that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want to, like I said to you guys last week, I don't even need Windows. I haven't run it on any of my machines in 10 years. I just thought, well, it might be nice to have just in case I need it. So
right. But now you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, I know all the headaches again. I'm learning all the new Windows headaches.
Yep, exactly right.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, you know.
Have fun.
Doesn't work. Yep, I'll just nuke it. But thanks a lot, guys.
All right, good luck, Kevin.
If I do find something that did work, I'll let you guys know.
Please let us know. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
See you later.
Bye.
Yeah, we're really...
Yeah.
Microsoft isn't giving enough information on these things, and so it's very hard for us to find the information we need to help you. That's just an issue we have.
I just find it ironic that he's really wants the Windows 11 upgrade.
Yeah.
When most people don't.
Right, exactly.
But if your machine is capable of it, there really isn't that much difference between 10 and 11 other than the task bars in the middle
right,
of the bottom, which you can move back to the left if you want to.
Right.
But system settings have rearranged a little bit, although it's not as big a change as it was from 7 to 10.
Right.
And in fact, the old Windows 7 control panels are still in there for old apps.
Yeah, but that's the only way they're going to make money for their shareholders is to come out with another version, even if it's just a minor thing of moving menus around.
Yep.
Exactly right.
Still doing the same stuff. They have not added any big innovations to Windows.
Right.
Windows 7 is just as good as Windows 11.
You're right.
All the features and everything that Windows does hasn't really changed if you think about it. There's no, I got to have it because it does this. No, it runs programs. It surfs the internet. You can write letters. It does what Windows 7 even did.
Right. Well, and that's why a lot of people are moving to Linux.
Yeah.
It does everything you want it to do, and it does it for free. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Rochester, New York. What's up, David?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, what do you do if Cloudflare is blocking your access to a site that you absolutely need and the site owner just blows it off? I just can't get any action. It's been blocked for months.
And you're absolutely certain it's Cloudflare that's blocking you?
Yeah, it comes up and says right on when I go to the site, it comes up and says your access is blocked. It gives a code and an IP address from where I'm calling from or where I'm sending from.
Do you mind giving us that website? Have you tried going there from different locations so you'd have a different IP address?
No, I haven't. I've tried all the different devices in the house. And
well, they would all go through the same thing. If you've got a laptop, take it to a library or a coffee shop or something and try it from there and see if the problem is with your block of IP addresses. See, what happens... Okay, so what happens is you get an IP address when you go on the internet. Your router gets an IP address. It comes from your internet service provider. They may have been blocked from going certain places because somebody else who uses that same ISP did something bad.
Blocked them as spam.
And they got blocked out as spam. And so now the entire block of people can't go to that place.
Yeah, it's green light.
The way you find that out is to grab a laptop, go somewhere else, or go to a friend's house and use their computer to go to that site.
Hopefully one that may have a different ISP, but at least a different IP address to start with.
Right. And see if there's a question, if you can get there from that house. That will tell you that the problem is with your IP address. You could then talk to, particularly if this is something you need for work or whatever, you could talk to the folks at Greenlight and say, look, this is happening. Can you give me an IP address on a different block?
Oh, that's a good idea.
But you need to be able to prove it to them first. You need to be able to say, I did this.
Yeah, do your homework.
Take a screenshot of that error message.
Yeah. Right, and take a screenshot of your laptop or somebody else's computer on a different network that can get there.
If you
and say, look, I can get there. Otherwise, it's my machines in my home that are the problem, so please give me a different an address on a different block.
And if you already subscribe to a VPN service, turn on your VPN.
Or turn off your VPN.
Or turn off your VPN, yeah. That would change the address that the other end sees your computer coming from.
Okay. Yeah, great. You know, it occurs to me I was at an Airbnb recently, and I could get there from that.
There you go.
Must mean that it's my IP address that's being blocked.
Yep.
Or your ISP itself.
Well, I haven't seen the whole ISP. I suppose, but it is very likely that it's the block of addresses that you're on. Okay. Very few companies these days block an entire ISP.
Yeah. Every now and then in the olden days, RR.com would get listed in the spam registries.
Right.
So nobody on Roadrunner, millions and millions of customers,
right,
could send email because RR.com got marked as spam because one person sent out a million messages as spam.
No, it's very hard to get off of a spam list.
Yeah.
There are mechanisms to do that if you're on a spam list, there are places that you can go to manage that. But if you're on a block list because someone in that block is a spammer, that's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work the same way. So yeah, the thing to do is get documentation. You know, like Steve said, take screenshots of not working at home and working at a B&B or wherever you were, and then talk to the folks at Greenlight, who so far I haven't had that problem, but the very few times I've had to call them, they were superior. So I think you should have no trouble managing to deal with them just fine. So definitely that's the way to go. Do a little documentation and then go for it. That sounds like the plan.
Yeah.
At this point, the internet is delicate, and it is easy to get blocked. It is easy for a systems administrator to block an entire block of IP addresses rather than narrowing it down to one person.
And sometimes it's by accident because they're a little overzealous on the real bad guy.
Or even they hit the bad guy, and then your address changed to the bad guy's address, and they got a different one.
Yeah.
So that can happen as well. Anyway, that music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the books. It is history. It is an ex-parrot. But do not despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. We're going to take a short break, a little bio break, but come on back for a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright. I was waiting for the music. The great music we were going to hear.
And 3 minutes after the hour, we're all surprised to be hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe.
I didn't even look to see, because it's just usually automatically, there.
We hear the music, and then we know to get ready to go. No music. So, surprise. Surprise to us. Okay.
The eclectic day on Saturdays. What is it? Latin and polka.
The whole weekend is eclectic.
Computers. Then German. Yep.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones now that we're awake, and we're going to talk to Scott from Webster, New York. What's up, Scott?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I made the mistake of participating in the democratic process by making a donation to a political party or candidate over my Google message service. And since then, I've been getting ads that don't represent my views, and they're just plain annoying. I've tried to block them. I spam them every time they come through. Finally, none of that seems to help. I went into Google and checked how I could do that. It said go to settings, Google all settings, go to ads, add privacy. I did what I needed to do there, and I'm still getting these requests for donation.
Yes.
And I just want to...
Are they, well, okay, thoughts. So a couple of things. Are they all coming from the same address?
No, they're all different phone numbers.
Are they text messages?
Oh, you're getting it on your phone.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They're text. They're all text.
You should be able to type stop in all caps.
And I do.
And there's a law saying that they can't, well, yeah, that phone number can't text you anymore, but...
More can.
Other ones can, yeah.
They have millions of phone numbers, and they're all robo numbers, I think.
And they tend... you donate to one place, and suddenly you get solicitations from all the other places.
Yeah, you get on a list.
Yeah.
It's beyond annoying. So I've done everything that you've just suggested. You know, the government says, you know, you make a complaint and go through that process, which I don't think that's going to stop these texts. So,
are you on an Android phone or an iPhone?
I'm on an Android, Pixel 7.
Okay, so one of the things you can do, and again, I realize it's an annoying pain. Open the menu, the message, excuse me, open the menu, hit that three-dot menu, and select block and report spam.
Okay.
And then you can also choose block this caller. So, as you figured out, you can block that individual caller, and you can report them, and if enough people report them, Google will block them. But that doesn't stop them from spamming you from another phone number.
Enough of the phone numbers get reported, then the FCC starts looking into the company sending them.
Right.
Yeah.
But you have to go through the pain of doing the blocking and reporting every time.
Or change your phone number.
Yeah.
Which is worse. Yeah.
And I suppose ad blockers for text, even though they might... Well, they're probably not very helpful.
The problem with ad blockers is it's not an ad. It's something you agreed to when you donated.
Okay.
They cannot legally block it for you.
There is a service called Nomo Robo that you can subscribe to. They read all of your phone calls and messages before they send them to you. So you basically forward all of your phone calls to them. They look at it, decide if it's real or not, and then send it on to you.
I
don't like the idea of someone else reading all my calls first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is possible.
Okay.
Right. And by the way, you can also forward any messages, any spam text can be forwarded to 7726, which, by the way, spells spam.
Right.
And it will be reported to your carrier and help them block it in the future.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful, even though it's not going to solve the problem, but it's a start. But
it's
I thank you for that.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, guys. Yep, happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Sorry. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, once you're on a list.
Yeah, it gets out there, and it's the World Wide Web, folks. It goes everywhere.
That's why I don't give my phone number. One of the things that
I wish we had throwaway phone numbers, like throwaway credit card numbers.
Well, we have. Well,
There are.
You can buy what they used to call burner phones.
Yeah.
Those cheap. They used to be $15. I'm sure they're more than that now. But you buy one of those. It comes with about 5 minutes of voice and 5 text messages, which is more than enough to sign up for a Google Voice number.
Yep.
Then you get a Google Voice number, and every time you want to do one of those things, you use Google Voice. Now you can, with Google Voice, you're going through your home network. So you turn on the phone. It connects to your Wi-Fi network. You do whatever you want to do, and then you just turn off the phone. And all those messages they send you, you never see till you turn the phone on again, and you can just ignore them. You know that there's not going to be anything on their phone that's real because you didn't give the number to anybody.
Exactly.
So, you know, if it, I had, for the longest time, I had a burner phone that I used for a business that I started. And that was the phone. It was a Google Voice number, which I could get on my computer and I could get on my right real phone. But I had this burner phone that I used for two text messages, and that was it. And then I threw it in a drawer, never looked at it again.
It's amazing. I still have it. It pops up in a lot of sites because they, you know, never went around and changed it. But my old business number.
Sure.
Which has been long gone. Matter of fact, 2013. So it's almost...
Yeah, it's 12 years.
Yeah, 12 years old. And it's like, well, if somebody wants to try to call, I don't know who they're going to get. But
right, right.
It ain't me.
Right. But yeah, my suggestion is... And, you know, on the one hand, I hate to say that this happens. You know, you're basically using Google... to be your spam catcher.
Yeah.
But you know what? Okay. The Google Voice numbers are free.
Mm-hmm.
So you spend, I don't know what it would be now, let's call it $30 to get one of those cheap pay-as-you-go phones,
mm-hmm.
burner phones, and set it up, get a Google Voice number, you're done, you move on. You've now got that number to do whatever you want with. And you can bring it up. You don't even have to turn that phone on. You can bring it up on your computer with Google Messages for Web.
All right. You can go to Target and get them, let's see, a burner phone for $37.99.
There you go.
Yeah, Target.
Yeah, they used to be $15. You can understand that.
Consumer Cellular's got one for $11.
There you go.
I keep threatening myself to do that. Because there's an Android app from Insane Rocketry. It's just insane.
Just insane.
You put it in your rocket, and it uses the camera to record the flight.
Nice.
And it uses the GPS to track the flight so you can find it when it flies away. But then it just flew away with my phone.
Well, but if it was an $11 phone, that's the cheapest thing you have in that rocket. Face it.
Yep.
The single cheapest thing.
speaking of which, Estes just released a Soyuz model.
Ooh.
About a meter tall. It's more of a scale model than it is a flying model.
Right.
I've been watching a master builder put it together, and oh my God, the things he does.
If it's a scale model of the Soyuz, it should fly.
Some of the scale models are not flying scale models.
Whatever.
But the big complaint about it is it's $130.
Right.
Which is expensive for a model rocket.
Right.
But then us high power guys are going, oh, you low power guys. The motor for my rocket was $7,000.
Exactly. Exactly right. That's why I'm telling you an $11 phone, a $39 phone, is still the cheapest thing in your rocket.
There's a guy, Dan Michaels, who's got a 3/4 scale Patriot missile and is a full scale Patriot missile.
Oh, jeez.
3/4 scale, I think, is 20 feet tall, and the full scale is 30 feet tall, 300 pounds. The 3/4 uses about $5,000 worth of motors.
Yeah.
And then the full scale uses about $7,000 worth of motors. Yeah. So that's...
For one flight.
So he flies it maybe part of the thing is he works for the company that makes the motors.
Yeah, okay, now we're talking.
So I'm sure he gets a pretty good discount.
He probably is tested. You know what?
Good, it's a test motor, yeah.
But
they do test. In fact, the full scale uses four N's and an O, which is almost a full P.
Yeah.
So the ABCD little rockets, Estes rockets, right, we fly, every letter is 10 times more powerful.
Right.
And in the early days,
we once got to C's and thought this is as far as anyone would go.
In the early days, E was considered too dangerous, and we couldn't fly that. And then they started making F's and G's and H's, and so I'm rated for I motors.
There you go.
Which are about $100.
Right.
And
rated form is different from buying them all the time.
Yes, I don't want to go for my level two because those motors started $100.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so some of these rockets 10 times more power. I think someone worked out that the shuttle solid boosters, which use the same fuel that we do, ammonium perchlorate, was like a triple P. So you go A through Z, and then you go around again, A through, then you go around
double,
again.
You do double A, double B.
Yep.
Wow. Triple P's, huh? Not bad. But yeah, so you can get a burner phone or what was the other term? Burner phone.
Yeah, burner phone.
For, you know, under $50.
Disposable.
For disposable phone or temporary phone or whatever, for $35, $40, and get a Google Voice number for free.
Pay-as-you-go.
Pay-as-you-go, that was the phrase I used. The pay-as-you-go phones, and depending on, you know, and it doesn't, honestly, it doesn't matter what carrier you get it on either, because you're only going to ever use it once.
Yeah, it just sits in the drawer and
that's it. Collects. So, you know, if you can get one for $11, get for one for $11, stick it in a drawer. Now you've got that Google Voice number that you can do anything you want with. Yeah. I know people who've got 3 or 4 of them, and they're different. You know, one is my business main number. One of them is my business accounting number. One of them is my business tech number. You know, so, here's my list of phone numbers, and it costs you $12 per phone to get those numbers. Cheap at half the price. So, you know, go for it.
And the aggravation that you're avoiding.
And again, you know, if the reason you're buying was like why Scott would get one to do for one-time things and then spam it for the rest of your life, you don't care what they do, it's well worth it. Now, you do have to actually use your Google Voice number once in a while, otherwise you lose it. I lost the one that I had on my burner phone because I didn't use it. But so you go on to the web or you break the phone out of the drawer, and every once in a while you send your other phone a text message.
Yeah.
Or you send one back to that phone and turn it on so you can receive it.
Yeah, just set up a message to remind you to do that once
a
month.
Exactly right. See, you know, if only we carried something around in our pockets that had a calendar in it that could remind us to do things. So
that'd be a good innovation.
That would be a good thing.
Nearest I can tell, it says every so often. But no specific, like every 90 days you have to do.
Yeah, how do they
define every so often.
I do it when I get the message from Google saying, you haven't used your phone number in a while.
Well, that's exactly right.
Can we have it back again?
Exactly right.
No.
So, no, you cannot. I want it. But it, you know, so if you want, you know, if you're looking to have multiple phone numbers for your business, or you just want a disposable number that you can use for the sort of thing that Scott used it for, buying a pay-as-you-go phone and then chucking it in a drawer, and then you can use it in an Android system, you can use messages for the web, and on Apple it's called something different.
I don't know if you can get messages on the website yet.
What?
Only on a device.
What? Look, Apple's already buying their AI from Google. They might as well buy this too. So if you've got an Android phone, and those are the let's face it, those are going to be the inexpensive ones, pretty cheap one. You can every once in a while go look at your messages on the web, send a message, receive a message, do what you want, and then and you're done. You know, do it once a month, and you can ignore or toss out all those old messages. You can you know, set them to do whatever you want with them. I suppose I should look at this. I'm bringing up messages for the web now. If you can say, you know, after 30 days, delete this message. But, right now I have to go to my phone and open the message and click on the emoji thing. Come on, show me what you got. There you go. We're good. Okay. Yeah, there it is. So yeah, it's real easy. You can see all your old chats. You can start a new chat. It picks up anybody who's in your contacts list. So you can, or you can type in a phone number. You can do it that way. So yeah, it's real easy. So if they're in your contact list, you'll see their little face or their name or whatever you've got for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, you see what's essentially a blank thing with a phone number, and that's real easy to say. You know, here's where your problem is. I got a I did this just the other day. I had a fraud alert. It was not a fraud alert. It was something I bought. It was an expensive something I bought. But my bank turned around and said, was this you? I said, yes, it was.
That's nice.
And I got it on my computer, and I was able to just not even, I didn't even have to take my phone out of my pocket. It was right there on the computer.
I had my bank let the $500 charge go through, but then questioned the $50 charge.
Sure, I understand that, yeah.
Nice that they did it. Wish it had been the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so if you are an Android user or you're about to get an Android phone, you can do Google Messages for Web, and that will let you...
Or just get them under voice.google.com.
Or you just go to voice.google.com, and you can easily see all your messages, send messages, receive messages right from your computer, or your tablet, or, you know, multiple devices at once.
Yep.
So, you know, anything you need to do, you can do.
We have a bunch of businesses that got Google Voice numbers to do their texting.
Yep.
So texting is back in style now. Text appointments and text how you doing, because no one wanted to put their cell phone number as the company's number, so it made a lot of sense.
Of course. And you
but,
can
don't use the free Google Voice in your business, because they'll stop you after too many texts.
Right.
And I don't know what too many is.
Yeah, they don't tell you what too many is.
Yeah, so you have to get a workspace right. Business account.
But if you're an individual and you're sending one or two texts,
yeah,
you know, or you're just receiving text because you're on a spam list, then the Google Voice number, my Google Voice number is private, and it is absolutely chock full of messages, none of which are spam yet. Knock on wood. but yeah, so if you're looking for an easy way to have a second phone number, a pay-as-you-go phone with a Google Voice number is the least expensive and easiest way to do it. All you have to do is remember every once in a while, send and receive a text, either by breaking the phone out of your drawer or going to messages on the web.
Yeah.
It's real easy. And I would, you know, I would suggest that if you're the sort of person who wants that second number, and again, it doesn't have to be for a business like Scott's doing. It could have been, you know, if he could have saved himself a lot of grief if he had known to do this beforehand.
Yep.
Or, well, don't use text messaging to donate money.
Or don't use text messaging, but you know.
But you got to log into their website to pay. They're going to want your email address.
That's exactly
right. So then you can make bogus email addresses, an email alias.
An email alias?
Virtually all the services have alias options.
I use duck.com for my fake email address. It blocks spam, forwards it to whatever email I want, and when I reply, it goes back through duck.com in the fake address and goes out from there. But I don't see any much spam from that because it blocks it all.
I love DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, Duck is good. There's lots of ways that you can, you know, one of the things that Google lets you do is have multiple email addresses by using plus messaging, plus addressing. So, I'm about to give you an email address that is not really mine, so do not email it. But if I were nick@gmail.com, right, and I wanted to get an email from, say, Sears, I might say my email address is nick+Sears@gmail.com. I would still get the email, but I would see it came from Sears. So if they sold that email address, I would know who sold it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a nice feature, but better is to have a second email address. And then, you know, I use Thunderbird. So I can have, you know, 100 email addresses set up in Thunderbird and just go check them if something comes in.
Yeah.
And so it's real easy. It's real easy to get multiple email addresses and check them all as you wish. So that's real easy and real convenient. And there are lots of little tricks like that that are available to us that we just really we don't know about.
Well, we don't think to use because, you know, for the most part, you don't have to worry about that stuff unless you've gone to some of these sites, you know, that like donations.
Well, like Scott did, you think afterwards, oh, I really
should have, coulda, woulda, you know.
Right.
Too late. You've already opened the barn door and all that stuff's just come pouring out.
Yep. But from now on, Scott will know. He can go out and get that pay-as-you-go phone. And and from now on, have a second phone number to do whatever he wants to do with it.
There are also apps that you can get on your phone itself that give
like
you...
Like Nomo Robo.
Yeah. Well, no, that give you a second phone number.
Oh, right. They give you a second phone number, yes.
I think I got four or five phone numbers on my phone between the actual cell service... we use one called Dialpad at work, and then I've got my personal Google Voice, the Cider Google Voice, my work Google Voice.
All on the same phone.
All on the same phone, yep.
That's the other thing. You can have multiple numbers on your phone.
Yep.
And you can have multiple phones.
So you need a utility belt of all your phones.
Yes.
Combine that into one phone with different apps.
Well, my suggestion is you put all those extra phones in a drawer somewhere and never look at them again. But you have all those numbers forwarding to your real phone. And so, and again, if you use those specific numbers the way they're supposed to, like Steve is doing, when you reply, it replies from that number, not from your number. So your phone number still remains private. You just have to be aware of where you're answering from.
And think what you're doing.
Think about what you're doing. But that becomes second nature after a while, too. For a while, it's a little touchy. You got to think about it. But you'll get there. The phones are a lot more capable than we think they are these days. You can do a whole lot more stuff with them. We just don't know about it or we don't think about it because, you know, we've got the two or three things we actually do. Did you know your phone can make phone calls? Who knew?
And somebody, they came up with that brilliant idea.
I don't know where that came from, but
I know,
they can do that.
It's amazing,
now.
Yeah.
And that's what we're for. No one or even three people can know everything.
Boy, that's true.
But between us, we know a lot.
Yeah.
and we backstop each other. This is the thing I like. You know, I'll say something, and Dave will say, no, it's this way, and you'll go, no, well, you know, what do you mean better this way? And that's why we're here.
We check each other, you know.
We check each other.
Yeah.
And that's because on a very, very basic level, we have some small amount of respect for each other. So I'm just saying enough that we see each other. 2 hours is enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, hey, as I've said before, this has at least lasted a lot longer than my first marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been doing this for a while.
36 years? My first marriage didn't make 10 years.
Yeah. Well, she had a stronger stomach than I thought. I mean,
she didn't.
I think I have finally outlasted both of my wife's previous husbands.
There you go.
All together.
Congratulations. That's very nice. That's very good.
It's 30. No, it was 30.
Yeah.
How long have you been with chemo? I love that story.
but there are a lot of features in your phone that we don't think of. And if you take a couple of minutes to look at what your phone is actually capable of, and think about how you might be able to use it to make the rest of your life easier. It's actually there's a lot of really interesting features there. I had somebody complaining that they needed a task manager. I said, "You have a phone. Your phone includes a task manager. Why aren't you using it?"
Yeah, there's a note app, and you can make checkboxes.
Or you
get up, get dressed, have breakfast. I checked off three things today.
Shopping list.
You can put text messages in Google Calendar now. Not text messages, tasks in Google Calendar now. So you can, they're right there. If you're using your calendar for anything, I say this to my wife all the time. Well, I have to do that. Did you put it? Never mind. Fine. You're fine. So if we have these devices and we should be using them more fully. All right. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the entire whole known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. And it's right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
At least we got music.
We have music this time. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Matthew from Batavia, New York, on the line. How's everything in Batavia, Matthew?
Pretty cloudy.
What's up?
I just want to say, first and foremost, you guys are my dear, dear friends. I got to say, you guys are electronical and computer geniuses. Nicholas, I love you. Dave, well,
thank Steven, you, Matthew. You need to get out more, but thank you very much.
Well, I do, I'm kind of like, what's it called, the person that stays in the house all the time or something, somebody like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did want to say thank you guys for so much what you do for the community and everything.
Thank you, Matthew, for saying that. Thank you.
You know what? Today, I'm going to do something. I'm going to make a $20 support donation, and I challenge anybody to match me back with a $40 ringer. Okay?
That's right. What we like to hear.
All right.
Matthew has challenged you out there.
Yeah. You go to Jazz 90.1 and click the big
red donate now button.
Yep.
So I want to talk about like artificial intelligence and all this stuff, and especially Christmas gifts and everything going on this year. You know, you got to think about Christmas, Thanksgiving gifts. I've seen all these things on TV today. It blows my brains out. I'm going crazy. Now, I mean, I know it sounds weird, but like, as far as like gifts for kids, I've seen these little Skechers, shoes on TV. You could put a little AirPod in them. I mean, not like to worry about the kids, but to be safe about the kids, we gotta love them, protect their children.
Yep.
You could put a little air tank in the bottom of their shoes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Track them now. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, all the stuff is also good for
seniors with Alzheimer's or memory loss.
Mm-hmm.
All the time you hear about a silver alert for someone that wandered away.
Yep.
Forgot where he was.
Yep, and now you can.
The shoes that have them built in now, so you don't have to add them
like
yourself.
A grandfather or a grandma, it would be a good gift to like donate a good set of shoes with a little air tag. You know, if the little girl runs away or something, something like that. Maybe if the kid's autistic, perhaps, you know.
Sure, right.
I don't know.
Or at the very least, a neck band thing.
Yeah, a necklace
sort of thing.
Yeah.
Good idea. Good idea, Matthew.
Well, that would be a good Christmas gift, but, I mean, all this stuff, the computer stuff is out of control. I mean, I've seen all, I watch TV constantly, like, 24-7, you know, because I'm an insomniac.
Sure.
But, I mean, I see these cops in these things these days. They got drones coming up in the windows, shooting out windows and blowing in drones.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some of that stuff is more Hollywood than real, but it's there.
Well, it does happen.
Yeah.
It could be a possibility. But I'm just,
and we in the model airplane community are really mad about a lot of these commercials that make us look bad.
I think it's pretty cool, actually, you know. But, you know, I just want to give a big shout-out to everybody and your whole crew, and wish everybody a good blessings for the holidays, man.
Well, thank you, Matthew, and all the same to you.
I'm going to donate 20 to your station today. And like I say, if you want to come back to me, match you back for 40.
There you go. Thanks. Thanks, Matthew. We appreciate that. Thanks.
Nicholas, Steve, and Dave, I love you guys, man.
Love you too, Matthew. Thanks.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye. And you can, of course, donate by going to jazz901.org and click that big red Donate Now button.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly could use your donations.
Yeah.
So this is the time.
Holiday is the time of giving.
This is the time. All right, let's do some news. Should we talk about the... let's see. We've got Microsoft news.
Yeah.
We've got Google news. And we've got miscellaneous news.
Do the miscellaneous.
All right. Assuming that I can get my fingers to work, these pages seem to be stuck together.
Remember, I think that was pretty good.
Oh, here we go.
Are we going?
No, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So.
Yeah, I don't read the news before the show. I'm surprised.
You should.
When you read it along. Yeah, because I sent you one of them you already had.
Exactly. There are times I despair for the human race. Times like this week when Apple's newest product,
yep,
the iPhone Pocket, a $230 sock with a hole in it went on sale Friday. Despite drawing mixed reviews and not nearly enough scornful ridicule, it sold out within hours. Seriously, Apple people? Seriously?
What? Was a famous Japanese designer.
Okay. I don't care.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
If he's not what you call it, who created Totoro, I don't want to know about it. So if you actually bought the iPhone sock, excuse me, pocket, call us and let us know why. Thousands of ASUS, ASUS, WRT routers, mostly end-of-life or outdated devices, have been hijacked in a global campaign called Operation WRT Hug, that exploits six vulnerabilities. Over the past 6 months, scanners looking for ASUS devices compromised in Operation Warthog identified roughly 50,000 unique IP addresses around the globe. If you're still running an ASUS WRT router, please stop. And you ASUS WRT owners are not alone. D-Link is warning of three remotely exploitable command execution vulnerabilities that affect all models and hardware revisions of its DIR878 router, which has reached end of service, but is still available in several markets. Both the WRT and DIR routers have reached end of life and will not get updated. So if you're running one, get a new one now.
And the exploit was stupid. There's no login needed for administration.
Right.
And the administration panel is open to the public internet.
It's
login needed.
It's the dumbest thing. It's the dumbest thing. South Korean tech giant Samsung has come under fire after users flagged that its devices contained what cybersecurity experts are calling bloatware across multiple regions globally. Bloatware is a pre-installed application that runs on a device's operating system. Initially, and this particular stuff, by the way, is unremovable. Initially, the software App Cloud was reported to be pre-installed in Samsung Galaxy A and M series phones across West Asia, North Africa, Europe, and South Asia. Have been reported that the bloatware also comes pre-installed on devices in other areas and is unremovable. Can the U.S. be far behind? Thunderbird 145 has been released with full native support for Microsoft Exchange email via the Exchange Web Services or EWS protocol. This means that Thunderbird users in Microsoft Exchange environments, for example, Microsoft 365 or Office 365 or anything that ends in 365, no longer need third-party add-ons and can benefit from seamless message synchronization and folder management locally and on the server. Migrating from Outlook to Thunderbird is also easier as Mozilla's email client automatically detects the settings and uses Microsoft's OAuth 2 authorization protocol. And finally, in the best news this week, Zork, the classic text-based adventure game of incalculable influence, has been made available under the MIT license, along with the sequels Zork 2 and the intelligently named Zork 3. The move to make these Zork's games open source comes as a result of the shared work of the Xbox and Activision teams, along with Microsoft's Open Source Programs Office. Parent company Microsoft owns the intellectual property for the franchise, so now you can find yourself in a maze of twisty patches, twisty little passages all alike for free. We're not all alike, but we are a little twisty. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's probably free, but how many ads do you have to put up with it as you're playing the different games? You know, you can get in so far and all of a sudden, whoop, got to have this ad. Well, you got to get out and then go back in.
That's why I'm waiting for it to. It is in public domain, so that means that the Linux community can grab it, remove all the ads, and legally disperse it.
Yep. There was a story a couple of weeks ago about a bunch of games that just got added to archive.org legally.
Legally.
To preserve them. And it's a part of our history, seeing some of these old games. And what's so funny is the most complex games of the 1990s work fine in a web browser on your tablet. Because the chips are so much more powerful.
Remember
today.
Wolfenstein?
Yep.
Castle Wolfenstein.
Somebody rewrote Wolfenstein for the touch bar on a Mac.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You can run Wolfenstein on almost every device available. Every device. I haven't seen it for a Tamagotchi yet, but
lot of the kids out there don't know what the heck we're talking about because that was one of the first games that came out besides Leisure Suit Larry and all those others, you know, and Mario Brothers. Were very simplistic.
Well,
I used to work at a company that had a German owner. And so the point of Castle Wolfenstein is you're rescuing prisoners from the Nazis.
Right. Killing Nazis.
And so his son started playing it, I don't like you killing games. But, Dad, they're Nazis.
Yep. That game actually was banned in Germany because they banned the depiction of the Nazi.
Yeah, pretty much anything Nazi related is banned in Germany.
Yeah, but now you can get ports of Wolfenstein and Hexen and Doom and all of those on pretty much every operating system. You can't run the WADs, the actual levels that you play. Those you have to get somewhere else, but the engines are available on pretty much every device on the planet. And there are lots of places you can get WADs. So,
and as I said, archive.org has a list of a lot of playable games that play right in your website. I was playing, what's the Castle one where you're shooting bats with rocks? Dark Castle.
Yeah.
They even, well, it's this original source code. They recreated one of the bugs where where you can stand in a certain spot on a certain level, and the bad guys can't get you, so you can just keep shooting them and shooting them and shooting them forever.
Nice. I would like to see a Call of Beth come back. That was kind of fun. That was one of the original games for the Apple II.
Hmm.
And it had very primitive graphics, which was fair, because that was pretty much all you could do on
Apple II.
Yeah, I mean,
they were so, the flat, not the 3D graphics that you get nowadays.
Well, it was 3D. Ish.
Yeah.
And I really liked the Call of Beth. And it was written in BASIC. So you could get the source code. And you weren't supposed to, of course. But it was written in BASIC. And you could look at the source code if you wanted to. I learned a lot of programming tricks from a Call of Beth.
We always played with Ultima, I think. Is that the name of it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I kept getting killed
Ultimate
by...
Ultimate 2.
Yeah, I kept getting killed by the gelatinous blob.
Oh, sure. Yes, indeed.
Damn gelatinous blob.
And did you ever play, what was the network game that Apple had with floating eyes?
Maze Wars. A bunch of different computers on your Apple Talk Network. And would shoot rockets at each other. So you're going through a maze, and you could shoot rockets, and one of the characters was a giant eyeball. And there were portals here and there, or teleports. So if you were really good, you could shoot a rocket into a teleport. It would come out the other end and kill the bad guy.
Yep.
Or kill your opponent.
And that was a game that was available on the Apple Talk Network. It was one of the very first network games. For home computers, of course, there were only network games on the Unix systems, but for home machines.
There's a website called My Abandoned Warrior.
Oh, nice.
Where you can play a lot of these old games. Oh, and they've got Maze Wars.
Do, nice. Do they have Kalabeth?
How do you spell it?
Akalabeth.
I can't type in the search button, so let me try Google.
So, yeah.
Kalabeth, World of Doom.
World of Doom, exactly right. Yeah, so those were some. And John Carnacki was the guy who created Doom, so. Which is not a Kalabeth World of Doom. But it had a backstory, it had a world building, small, but.
It's available on Good Old Games for free.
Nice! I'll have to. You're going to post those?
3D wireframe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And you climb ladders and had monsters
Lode,
and...
Lode Runner was one of the first biggest games I played.
Yeah.
But I remember that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was the first game I bought on the Macintosh.
Yep.
And it came with your peril-sensitive sunglasses.
Yep.
So whenever you're in peril, you put on these dark glasses so you can't see the peril.
Right.
And the scratch and sniff card. You get to some point in the game, you have to scratch number 7 and tell me what is it to proceed in the game.
Yep.
And I loved the hint booklet that you'd use like a highlighter,
okay,
to highlight a basic hint about how to solve this puzzle. And some of them had 4 or 5 different levels before it just told you what to do.
Right.
Getting the babblefish was like 45 steps.
Oh, yeah. The babblefish was hard.
To get the babblefish.
But you had to have the babblefish.
You had to have the babblefish. I remember one time I got to the end of the game where we've landed on the planet with the planet builders.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the door jams of the spaceship as you're trying to go out.
Right, right.
And Marvin asks for the toothbrush to repair it. He asks for a random thing from somewhere in the game.
Right.
Toothbrushes in scene 1.
Right.
Where you wake up with a headache and go to the bathroom to get the aspirin and see a toothbrush. So you played the entire...
You got to go all the way back to get the toothbrush?
Start over again. And you had that thing your grandmother gave you that you can't get rid of, that you put stuff in, because you can only hold so many things. So you put it in that thing your grandmother gave you can't get rid of, and it would show up every now and then, and you could pull something out of it you might need.
Yep.
That was, and it came on a single floppy disk.
Yeah.
That's how great the programming was back then.
That was some amazing stuff back then.
I can remember the first game that we played at work, and we had this big upright computer for doing analytical work.
Yeah.
But we had written in BASIC because they had published back then the PC magazine. This farming program. So we wrote it all up and put it on a floppy. And in between times, we could load that in. And it was just on a monochrome screen. And it'd sit there and spit out and tell you, all right, well, you got these many acres, and you got this much planted in wheat, and this much. And you had to balance it to make your neighborhood grow.
What did we call that?
A number of times, you know, sorry, you failed, you starved the whole town, and they're dead.
They're dead now, yep.
We played that on the mainframe with a teletype, a deck writer, line-by-line printer. So every line.
Yep.
Storm comes, wipes out your crops, people starve.
Yeah.
And the amount of paper we wasted.
Yep.
Because the lines were all that short, but the paper was 132 characters.
Yep.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty amazing. Who was it? Was it you? Somebody just sent me a font.
Yes.
It was you.
The, the Epson MX-80 font has been faithfully reproduced in TrueType and OpenType. And so now you can type like it's 1980.
So you can use the dot matrix.
Oh, really?
Epson MX-80 font. Very cute. Very cute.
Oh, I remember those
machines. I installed it and then immediately uninstalled it.
Yeah, you'd be tempted to use it.
Yes, exactly.
You hear it going.
Yep.
When you had the printers all inside of
those soundproofing cases.
Sound dampening.
Dampening. You weren't soundproof.
And we used to shove it way in the back corner of the office, you know, and inadvertently people would sit there, you know, open up the lid, pull off the stuff and that, and forget to put the lid down. And you'd hear somebody in the front of the, close that damn lid!
Yep. Worse was when they pulled it off and they pulled the perforations off the roller and didn't put it back. So the next person in paper shooting out.
Oh, yeah.
We should see how high we could get it to go. How fast can you print?
Did you guys ever have line printers? Printers that would print
the whole line at a time.
Line at a time?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those you could really get high.
Those you could get moving. The problem with those is because we used to use them at the bank to print checks. There was a terminal speed. You couldn't make them go faster because of air resistance.
Yep. Xerox copiers. We had big jobs at Xerox for a long time. About 100 copies a minute.
Is the maximum.
Is about the max it could go. And they even do a partial vacuum in the giant copiers. They try to lower the air pressure.
Yep. And it still can only go so fast because you can't move paper any faster than that.
I had an old Epson dot matrix for doing up the forms at work.
The MX-80.
Yeah. And that thing was reliable as all get out, noisy as all hell. That's why we put it in this one cupboard.
Yep.
And I put this other dampening stuff like you use in acoustic sound systems just to dampen some of the noise because, you know, people would come in and if you were printing off invoices because it was a three-part invoice.
Oh, yeah.
You're going back and forth, and that at least dampened it somewhat.
Yep. You know, those were the days, man. We had, and we were rich. If you actually had a dot matrix printer, you were rich. I remember the time I had my Apple II with 64K of RAM. I had two floppy drives. The green monitor was at 10 inches, and the thermal printer. And I remember saying to my wife, and she reminds me to this day, I remember saying to my wife, this is it. This is all I will ever need. I'm never going to need another thing. And about 6 months later, I got a modem, and then I got another computer, and then I was lost. But, yeah, we remember
we
all
went
of
to
that
the dark
stuff.
Side.
And that's why these things need to be preserved, is people don't remember these histories, came from.
Well, I found is it Sony? Yeah, it must be Sony. Mini disc.
Ooh.
That was for music mostly, but you could save data on it as well. I have no idea what's on it because it's not labeled. It may be nothing. But now I don't really have anything I can read it with, so I don't know what's on it, if anything. I've still got some tiny little backup tapes from a tape backup device I had decades ago. I've still got a Bernoulli drive. Bernoulli disk, not a drive. I've still got several zip drives. What?
We've got zip drives and jazz drives.
Jazz drives. I've got. Yep. I had a jazz disc.
SideQuests.
Uh huh.
We made a ton of CDs. We had a 4X CD burner that was like $5,000. But then people could give us 10 SideQuest discs, which were $100 a piece.
Yep.
We could put it on one CD and give them back 10 blank discs.
Yep. Amazing.
Yep.
It's amazing, and I have an 8-inch floppy disc sitting around with some code I wrote on it decades ago for the Exidy Sorcerer, as a matter of fact. What a great little machine that was. Yeah, those were the days. You
the trash 80.
Puppies, you little whippersnappers. You don't know what you're missing.
We wrote a game for Trash 80, TRS 80, which didn't have a sound card.
Yes, well.
So the solution was to put a detuned AM radio next to it.
Yep.
And there was so much EM interference coming off. So when you had a spaceship explode, you'd make the screen white, and this burst of static would come out and sounded like it exploded. It was
like
great.
An explosion.
Yeah, we'd just keep it away from all the other computers.
Yeah, right, right. All right, that's it. I have to say one other thing. If you put the Apple II monitor on top of the Apple II discs, the magnet in the monitor lifted the read arms and you couldn't read discs with it.
Yep.
All right, that's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who listened. I want to thank Dave Enright for staying awake. I want to thank Steve Ray for pretending he remembers old stuff. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. We're here every Saturday from noon till 2 p.m. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your significant and insignificant others, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?